You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 27th of May 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing? Have you had a nice week off?
Well, I just read a book review from Russia Insider. They reviewed my Ukrainian nationalism book. And they referred to me as a national treasure. So from now on, I wouldn't mind it if you referred to me as a national treasure from now on, or NT for short. I don't want to be arrogant or anything, but just know who you're talking to here. I'll repeat myself, a national treasure. So just don't get intimidated. Just let's just be like normal. NT is good and we'll be fine.
Okay, NTMR Johnson. Well, you must be really chuffed to bits with that. That is good. And it's good to see that you're getting reviewed in Russia Insider as well, and you're getting promotion out there for your books. And you are one of the very few people in the West that are covering news from the East and covering news from the Slavic nations. And we're going to be talking about one of your favorite subjects today. We're going to be talking about Belarus, because Belarus is in the news once again. It's making international news, all to do with this airplane that got grounded last week. Belarusian authorities scrambled a fighter jet and flagged what turned out to be a false bomb alert to force a Ryanair plane to land on Sunday, and then detained an opposition-minded journalist who was on board, drawing condemnation from Europe and the United States. In what was described by some EU leaders as a hijacking, the passenger plane flying from Athens to Lithuania was suddenly diverted to Minsk, the capital of Belarus, escorted there by a Soviet-era MiG-29 fighter jet. On its landing, authorities took journalist Roman Protasevich into custody. Now, he must have been really shocked. I mean, that must have been really scary for him. He's a wanted man in Belarus, and he's traveling from Greece to Lithuania, and I don't know, it must have been about 20 minutes away from Vilnius, and suddenly he sees a fighter jet to the side of his window, and the plane, instead of heading towards Vilnius, starts turning around back to Belarus. I mean, his heart must have really sank into his boots. You do have to feel for the guy. What do you make of what happened here, Matt?
Yes, my heart is just bursting with sympathy for him. Well, just like the Navalny case and all these other cases, these people are no big deal. Lukashenko has been one of the most popular politicians in Europe for 20 years. This guy with a few thousand followers on Telegram is not a threat, besides the fact they could have arrested him anywhere. But the story, of course, the Western narrative, which they all repeated immediately without any investigation, is completely wrong. Belarusian government did not order any landing of the plane. That was the airline and the pilot. Now, all of that's been published online in Belarusian and in Russian right now. The airline received an email, of all things, about a bomb on board, and even the Lithuanian International Airport in Vilnius said you need to land this thing. Only afterwards did Lukashenko get a phone call, and that's when the fighter jet was launched. The funny thing is, Protasevich was already blogging, or his people on the ground were already blogging about the arrest before it happened. He was claiming that he was being followed everywhere by Russian agents. He has very little evidence of this. But the Tikhanovskaya and all these you know, color revolution Westerners were all in on this, and they were. Her Twitter feed on the arrest occurred before it happened, or you know, seconds before it happened. So, I have the feeling, and don't forget too, this threat came from Switzerland. The Hamas connection was you know, very quickly, which is bizarre because Belarus has been pro-Hamas from the beginning. So I'm not sure why they would have any problems. But the bomb threat came in roughly at a time where they were flying over a nuclear power plant, a large one. And this is what, and that plant went on full alert at this point. They're one of the first ones notified. So none of this, is, of course, is in the major press. Lukashenko has absolutely no interest in any of this. Not to mention the fact that the U.S., the EU, have refused to join the investigative committee that he's established to look into this thing right away because, you know, the terrorist act, the bomb threat, whatever, he has to report that to all the relevant agencies, which he did internationally, and they all refuse to have anything to do with him. They won't talk about it. They won't investigate. He's established an institution to investigate things. He's doing this all by himself now. No one wants anything to do with it. This is obviously not in his interest. This kid is a nobody. Of course, he comes from, you know, comes from a wealthy family, you know, typical, or, you know, and even if they were arresting him, does nothing. His telegram is he's based in Poland. That would have nothing to do with that. It would do nothing but raise his coinage and make him a hero in the international. No one's heard of this guy before. And it's the same with all of these cases, the exact same thing. Nothing makes any sense. No one asks any questions. And they have this narrative already written just as the event was reported. So they were given a script. I mean, this guy was working for Radio Free Europe, which initially was CIA. Now it's owned by Soros. You know, it's the same damn narrative over and over again. No one questions how absurd it is. Nothing makes any sense. And now they're talking about some of the most extreme sanctions, and which they were talking about just a week ago anyway. And if that's not enough, this is just, this is maybe a week before the Euro summit, which is now on its second day, and just a short time before a meeting between Lukashenko and Putin over security issues. So the timing is awfully coincidental. And that's just the beginning of how absurd this whole story is.
Well, you were mentioning there that there were supposed to be KGB agents that were following him. That was reported, I think, in The Independent and The Guardian, but it was shown that actually the only people that stayed in Minsk were people that were traveling to Minsk anyway, and they were shown to not be anything to do with KGB agents or anything like that. And perhaps what you were mentioning there about the fact that there was a nuclear power plant that was in the flight path, that may explain why the plane was diverted to Vilnius. Because it did look as if it was just as quick for the plane to, diverted to Minsk, because it does look as if it was just as quick for the plane to keep heading on to Vilnius. You know, so why did it divert and go to Minsk? Well, that could have been because there was a nuclear power plant in its path. But you mentioned the sanctions there. EU leaders triggered new economic sanctions against Belarus and punitive measures against its national airline as a dissident taken from a hijacked Ryanair flight was paraded on the country's television news, apparently confessing to crimes against the state. In a summit communique swiftly agreed in Brussels on Monday night, the EU's 27 heads of state and government condemned the forced landing of flight FR4978 in Minsk and called for the immediate release of opposition blogger Roman Protasevich and his Russian girlfriend Sofia Sapiga. The statement came shortly after the release of a video in which Protasevich denied reports that he had suffered health problems since his arrest in the Belarusian capital and said that he was confessing to inciting mass riots, a charge that carries a maximum prison sentence of 15 years. The video, which appeared to have been filmed by police, was Protasevich's first appearance since his arrest. Protasevich, who was dressed in a black hoodie and seated next to a pack of cigarettes, said, "I can declare that I have no problems with my health, either with my heart or with any other organs. Police officers are treating me absolutely correctly and according to the law. I am currently continuing to cooperate with the investigation and I'm giving a confession to the organisation of mass protests in the city of Minsk." The opposition journalist appeared to have bruising above his right eye. He has not previously said he planned to confess to the charges against him, and several journalists who know him have said they believe he is under duress. Well, it's going to be pretty hard for him to not admit to organising these protests. I mean, it was known that he had organised these protests. That's why he left the country. I don't think he could actually deny that. And so I should imagine that that's why he is cooperating with the investigation, because there's no question that he was the one that organised these mass protests. What do you make of his appearance on the television here, Matt?
You know, I love how they go to his friends for their opinion, as if they're going to get anything but, you know, supportive statements. And if you're an actual journalist, the first thing you're going to do is, of course, you're going to go to his supporters and you're going to go to the government. You're going to get their point of view. And of course, they never do this. The narrative had already been written out. There's no reason to mistreat this nobody. But because he was in Poland, he'd been there for some time with CIA protection, Soros protection. So this so-called girlfriend who he's known for just a few months, Sapiega, I think the relationship is political and financial. He had full freedom to confess. Not only that, he was also involved in doxing security officials, because, you know, they usually wear the bandanas around their face to protect their identity. And they were involved in these doxing operations. And this is one of the things he's in serious trouble for. But if this were any other country, you know, they'd be doing the exact same thing. Lukashenko won an election based roughly on his popularity figure. By 75%, he won 80%. It's pretty normal. Same thing for Putin in Russia. He has no reason to forge anything because he's extremely popular, has been for a very long time. Belarus is the most advanced, economically advanced country in the CIS. You know, this guy, again, I don't know, 100,000 subscribers, I mean, something fairly minor, just like the other people we talked about here before, Tikhonskaya and her husband. No big deal. There's no reason for him to be mistreated. There's no reason for this to even have occurred. They could have arrested him anywhere. And this is, you know, again, no one asked these questions. Now, of course, you're going to say it's under duress, but yeah, he's confessed this stuff before and worse. You know, everything that Lukashenko or was done here by the airline, by the government, by the police, has been done according to law, according to every, you know, if there's a bomb on board, which is a very suspicious concept in the first place. Unless it came from the West, which is a definite possibility, or how he was arrested or what he was arrested for. This is all pretty normal stuff. But of course, he's under the protection of Western intelligence, at least been given money by them, and his girlfriend too, or this woman. And so therefore, the rules don't apply.
Well, when we're talking about numbers, we have to bear in mind Belarus is a very small country, and the people that would be joining his Telegram group would also be people from Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, all those Baltic countries that are there. And there was something else I wanted to point out then, but it's escaped my mind. Maybe it will come back in a minute. Let's talk about these sanctions on the airspace. Under the measures agreed by the EU leaders, a raft of economic sanctions will be applied against those involved in the arrests, adding to those imposed months earlier on nearly 60 Belarusian officials, including President Alexander Lukashenko and his son Viktor, relating to the crackdown on peaceful protests against last August's allegedly rigged presidential election result. The new sanctions will cover individuals involved in the hijacking, businesses that finance the Belarus regime, and the aviation sector. The EU's heads of state and government also called on EU carriers to avoid Belarusian airspace and agreed to adopt the necessary measures to ban overflight of EU airspace by Belarusian airlines and prevent access to EU airports, in a major blow to the country's national airline. European flights over the country's airspace have already been suspended. And we have an update on that now. We hear today, or a couple of hours before we actually went on air, that Russia has now banned any EU airline that has refused to fly over Belarusian airspace. Any European airline that has diverted around Belarus is not allowed to fly through Russian airspace. And when you think Russian airspace is, I don't know, a quarter of the world's airspace, I mean, it's an absolutely massive landmass there, and they are banning all European airlines from actually flying over there if their flight path should have included Belarusia, and they've gone around it. And that is quite a serious escalation, I think. What do you make of these sanctions that they've come up with here, Matt?
Well, as I said before, they were talking about pretty severe sanctions just as early as a week ago. Sanctions on Belarus have been around for a long time. The Belarusian market is to the east, with the exception of Germany and, you know, a handful of other places. Western sanctions don't mean a whole lot. They're in the customs union. The same thing with Ukraine. I mean, they have nothing that the West wants, but what the East certainly wants. So the economy won't be affected to a great extent. Now, the air restrictions are a problem, because I'm guaranteeing you right now, Germany is not going to obey what the Western regime wants them to do. But Belarus is so prosperous and such a good place to do business. There's a lot of German companies there. There's a lot of German millionaires and billionaires that are doing very well there. Same thing for Russia. They're not going to suddenly pull out and lose a fortune because the West is upset that some leftist was arrested. So you're going to have a huge split, even more so now in the EU and NATO. What they may do is just simply obey for a couple of days, let this stupid thing die down, and then return to business as usual. This has been going on for a long time. One side of the mouth, the regime says how awful Belarus is. On the other, they make a big profit there because it is a very prosperous place, especially when the other parts of Eastern Europe were falling apart years ago. Belarus was doing very well because you have a social nationalist leader there. I wrote that article about 15 years ago, what kind of a man he was. He is one of us in almost every way, refusing to put any COVID restrictions. You know, the guy is it's like one of us was elected president over there. So that's really what this is about more than anything else. But it's absurd to think that German – and there's actually a lot of Polish investment there. A lot of people are making a lot of money in that country, and they're not going to pull out and lose a huge fortune just because the West is all upset about something.
Well, you're saying he's one of us, and I mean, Belarus is 99.9% white, and this is what I point out to Belarusian students that try to say, oh, yes, but look at him. He surrounds himself by communist regalia, but your country is 99.9% white, and that's what matters. It really doesn't matter what way he has of governing it. You're not actually being replaced in your own country, and that's the important thing. And I just wanted to go back to what you were saying about the doxings of the police officers, and that is a very serious thing that went on there. I mean, his Telegram group apparently gave the names and addresses and where the wives were, the children were, of all the people that were members of the police that were providing security at these protests. Now, whether that was him or not, it was his Telegram group that was providing that information, and that is very serious, probably just as serious as arranging the protests, or far more serious than arranging the protests. And I don't know whether he is confess to that or not. Well, there have also been lots of other groundings of airplanes, because the EU are saying this is a terrible thing. Nobody's ever grounded an airplane before. And in actual fact, this has happened quite a few times. In 2010, a flight from France to Mexico was diverted at the behest of the US government to arrest a passenger. Then in 2012, Turkey forced a passenger plane travelling from Moscow to Damascus to land on Turkish soil in order to inspect it for military equipment. At the time, Western states committed to regime change in Syria prioritised solidarity with Turkey above any concerns over the rules of civil aviation. In 2013, France, Spain, Portugal and Italy all denied a plane carrying the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, access to their airspace at the request of the US government. Without enough fuel for alternative routes, the presidential jet was forced to land in Austria, where it was inspected in a search for the whistleblower Edward Snowden, who was falsely believed to have been on board. Breaching the conventions and treaties governing international air travel and potentially jeopardising the life of the Bolivian president was deemed a legitimate step if it meant arresting the whistleblower Snowden. In 2016, Ukraine threatened to deploy fighter jets to force a Belarusian airliner to make a U-turn and return to Kiev, where officials were eager to arrest an Armenian anti-Maidan critic. There was no outrage from Washington, which was a key supporter of the 2014 movement and would become an advocate for future regime change in Belarus. So you see, this precedent has actually been set by the West, that if you have a wanted person that is on board a flight that is travelling through your airspace, you can do all sorts of things to try and get that plane to land in your country so that you can then have a look around the plane or arrest whoever is on it. This is a precedent that was already set by the West and that is now being used as an excuse to come out with all these sanctions. What do you know about these groundings of these other flights, Matt?
Well, back in 2016, now I had forgotten about this, but in 2016, the guy's name was Andrei Matrosyan, obviously an Armenian name, who was on the Belavia, which is the Belarusian airliner, and that was forced to land, as we've mentioned, forced to turn around, and he was arrested. He was an anti-Maidan activist. He was, you know, again, journalist and blogger, just like this guy is supposed to be. And in that particular case, and I actually spoke about it at the time, the Ukrainian Air Force, all four of its planes, said that they were going to shoot the thing down unless they turned around. And not only was this not a problem, but of course it was celebrated. And again, we can't assume objectivity. There's not even an attempt at objectivity here. This hyper-emotional, this saccharine rhetoric is a classic mark of a, you know, of phony indignation. These scripts were given on the day of the event. When they were issuing these condemnations, you know, in the West, they had no idea what happened. There was no investigation. They had no idea who this kid even was. But of course, they were granted somehow, but they knew every detail that very day. And again, no one even, so objectivity's never been their purpose. They don't care about that. It's just they're using whatever weapons they can use. The riots, the color revolution, everything has failed in Belarus. It is still, again, because of the lack of the lockdowns, the economy is still doing relatively well compared to everybody else. And they can't break him. He's too popular. And this is really a pathetic attempt to start a war, even though, you know, God, in the Ukrainian case, they threatened to shoot the plane down unless it came back. Ukraine, of course, at the time, being a colony of the U.S. like it is now, it was an American operation. So you know, the objectivity, we can't double standards. Well, they're proud of their double standard. That's not an issue. But it just shows you this happens all the time. This is just something they needed to glom onto. And the more I'm reading about this in the Russian press, the more I realize that this is something that came from the West or even from his movement itself, the liberal movement in Belarus. It's something that catapulted this guy to the stratosphere of the news where he never would have reached otherwise.
Well, wasn't Snowden, isn't he a journalist or something similar to a journalist? We can take a closer look at what happened there. That's quite an interesting incident. In July 2013, shortly after Snowden's name became globally known, the US annulled his passport, and the man who helped expose US invasive electronic surveillance was stranded in the transit zone of a Moscow airport, unable to leave. Russia at the time hosted an international energy conference, and one of the guests, then president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, indicated that his country could grant Snowden political asylum. Some people in Washington apparently presumed he would take Snowden with him to Bolivia. After Morales' jet departed from Moscow, several European countries denied it the use of their airspace, which ultimately forced the aircraft to land in Austria. Local officials claimed they searched the plane, but the fugitive American was nowhere to be found. The plane had flown from Moscow's Vnukovo Airport, not Sheremetyevo Airport, where Snowden was stranded at the time. The incident was widely condemned by Bolivia and some of its friends in Latin America. France and Spain eventually apologized for their parts in the episode. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange later claimed the US had fallen for a ruse from his team, who were discussing the possibility of smuggling Snowden out of Russia on a presidential plane of another country, but were mentioning Bolivia instead to distract US intelligence. The smuggling plan was never put into action, though. Snowden ultimately received political asylum in Russia itself and has lived there ever since. NATO states are now calling for the immediate release of Roman Protasevich, who is referred to as an independent journalist. However, Minsk considers Protasevich to be a regime change operative supported by the West, which suggests that the borders between the domestic and the international were broken long before the Ryanair flight was forced to land. So there is a similarity there between journalism and this guy who is supposed to be a journalist. I mean, basically, he's just working for the West. He's a traitor to his own country. He's taken the the United States dollar rather than the, I don't know, the Belarusian shilling. What is it they use in Belarus, Matt, you know?
Oh, yeah, it's, you know, they're using the ruble most of the time, I think. I don't know why it's not coming to me, but that's exactly it. It doesn't matter. I don't know. I'm blanking on that for some reason, but it's connected. It's pegged to the Russian ruble, so they never have to worry about its value or its fluctuation because the ruble is rock solid. But the big issue here is that this, they didn't just force down this plane. They forced down the plane with the president of a country in it. Now, I'm not sure about the ruse part, but my God, you know, and they're refusing to land in certain countries. And the other big difference here, we all know this for both for Snowden and all these other people, is that these people haven't committed any crimes. They're doing what a journalist is supposed to do. Protasevich, if he was in any other country, would be considered a criminal. And this notion that they're claiming he's regime change operative supported, by the way, that's not a claim. He's not shy about this. Even his own official biography talks about his sponsorship from the West. They're not even trying to hide this anymore. But again, Johnson's law being what it is, you know, no one knows anything. They think this man is this crusader for peace and justice with the whole country's behind him. And this, you know, isolated, maniacal dictator is trying to silence him because he's scared to death. You know, that's the image. But 99% of the people, including educated people, have no idea what's going on there, how marginalized Protasevich is. Look, the fact is that if it wasn't for Lukashenko, Belarus would be a fourth world country like Ukraine today. He stopped privatization. They have the lowest infant mortality rate in Europe at the moment, or at least prior to COVID. Their medical, their scientific, they're in industry. They are a tremendously advanced country by Western standards. Their unemployment rate is about 1.1, 1.2% at the most. They're racially very unified, as you noted. And I also want to note, too, Protasevich did a documentary not too long ago about how terrible it is that Chechen refugees can't get into Europe. So any claim that he's some kind of a right-winger is nonsense. And so the racial policies in Belarus are under attack from this guy. It was a real tear-jerking thing. I only saw part of it. So this guy is an operative. He doesn't really have political principles. It doesn't matter. But he is a criminal, and Lukashenko did save Belarus from fourth world status. And that's why he's always going to be, that's why he's extremely popular there. So if this idiot gets his way, God knows they're going to be colonized by the West. Their industry is going to be dismantled. The currency will be taken over by Western banks. Of course, Belarus has fully state currency. So, you know, that's what's at stake here. And Lukashenko, as I've said, is still one of the most popular politicians in the on the planet.
If Protasevich gets his way, it will be gay pride in Minsk instead of traditional balls. Well, it is no great secret that the US has been investing in regime change in Belarus and was possibly involved in an assassination attempt. Protasevich edits the Belomova Telegram channel and previously had overseen the Polish-based Nexter, which has helped to organise the protests in Belarus. He has also worked for the US state-run Euro Radio and RFERL. Furthermore, reports indicate he worked in the press service of the neo-Nazi-led Azov Battalion in Ukraine, which took on a prominent role following the American-backed coup. One independent British journalist, Jake Hanrahan, has suggested he has proof that Protasevich even fought in the fascist militia. And I don't think that really tells us about any National Socialist or fascist sympathies of this Protasevich. It just shows that he is against Russia. It just shows he's a traitor to his people, really, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything at all. His political opinions, the documentary I just mentioned, everything is 100% liberal. So there's no question. They said the same thing about Navalny, if you remember. I was right. It is a ruble, by the way, but it's a Belarusian ruble. That's what I thought. So I'm not sure why I blanked on that. But all these next to you're working for, and it's not state run, RFERL, that is a Soros organization. All of those things, and you know, CIA and Soros work very closely. The big banking families are running these propaganda outlets. They used to be anti-Soviet. Now, of course, they're anti-Putin and pro-NATO. So this whole thing about this trying to connect him with fascism is a terrible strategy. It doesn't make any sense. His political opinions are fairly well known. They're immature, but they're very well known. And it's just they've tried this strategy in eastern Ukraine before, you know. But everything he does is for liberal financial powers. That's why he's with the woman that he's with. And he, of course, comes from that same background. I have a cat more Belarusian than this kid is.
Well, we've got one final topic to look at before we finish, and that is the supposed Hamas bomb threat. On Tuesday, the Islamist militant group railed against suggestions by authorities in Belarus that it had issued a bomb threat against a Ryanair flight from Greece to Lithuania. The purported security breach was given as a pretext to force the plane to land while it was in Belarusian airspace, after which the editor of a banned opposition-linked Telegram channel, Roman Protasevich, was arrested on the tarmac. Officials in the capital, Minsk, claimed to have acted after receiving a statement that said, "We, the soldiers of Hamas, demand that Israel cease fire in the Gaza Strip. We demand that the European Union withdraw its support for Israel in this war." Otherwise, the note read, "The Ryanair flight would explode over Vilnius." Ah, there we go. There's that explanation why it didn't go to Vilnius, why it turned off to Minsk. Belarus's embattled leader, Alexander Lukashenko, has since claimed that the notification about the potential threat to the passenger jet came from Switzerland. He said his officials acted legally, protecting people in accordance with all international rules. "Hamas or no Hamas, it does not matter. The crew had time to make a decision," he added. Belarus has faced waves of protests since Lukashenko declared victory in last summer's presidential election, and his security forces have since begun a crackdown on demonstrators and the media. Hamas spokesman Fazi Barhoum told journalists on Monday that the group had no knowledge of or connection to the incident. "We don't resort to these methods," he told reporters, suggesting that it could be the doing of some suspicious parties that aim to demonize Hamas and foil the state of world sympathy with our Palestinian people and their legitimate resistance. Moscow's Lenta news site on Tuesday reported exclusive comments from the deputy head of the Palestinian group's political bureau, Musa Abu Marzouk, that appeared to go even further in rejecting the claims. "This is outrageous and demonstrates the archaic thinking on the part of the Belarusian government," he railed, saying officials do not understand that we now live in an age of free media and that there is international public opinion that no longer accepts such methods. So Hamas are saying that they're being smeared there by claiming that they phoned in this bomb threat, and I have to agree with him. It doesn't really seem like something that they would do. So what do you make of this bomb threat that was supposedly called in by Hamas, Matt?
Oh, it made me laugh. There were some in the government in Minsk that told Lukashenko this. It didn't make any sense because, you know, Belarus itself is, and this plane was full of Russians and Belarusians. They've been supporters of Hamas from the very beginning. So that's absurd. Now Vilnius is a different story because they're part of the West now. But you know, this is just trying to demonize them at a time of unrest. There, Hamas is very popular. And so it's the same story. It's nonsensical. But no one in Belarus believes that was a very brief thing that the Western media grabbed onto or possibly invented from the beginning. The bomb threat came from Switzerland with a Polish IP address. And using email almost suggests that they want to be traced. So the whole thing is ridiculous.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.